So do I go?
Oh, I didn't know that part.
This is worth repeating.
Okay.
This is worth repeating.
Live storytelling from Texas Public Radio.
In 1975, I got a degree at University of California at Irvine in art, and I just sat back and assumed that the art world was going to beat a path to my door, and I was shocked when that didn't happen. So I had a lot of odd jobs, and one of the odd jobs I had was that I was a butler at the Playboy Mansion. And you know, it gets better. That's just the tip of it. So I want to tell you two things about this job. Number one, it did not affect my life in any way. It did not make me who I am. It did not inform me. It was just a fun job. Number two, I did not apply for this job. I was like every job I ever had in my life, it was given to me by friends, and I was taking printmaking with a couple of cousins. One of them was Bob, who was a chef at the Playboy Mansion, and the other one was John Maldonado, who was the head butler there. And so it's 1977, I don't have a job. Somebody asked me if I want to be a butler at the Playboy Mansion, mostly working parties, and I wasn't going to say no. In fact, I kind of thought I hit the jackpot. So the Playboy Mansion is right between Beverly Hills and UCLA, so they never had to go very far for beautiful women, and it's a gigantic 20,000 square foot Tudor Gothic mansion that looks like it's right out of Harry Potter. It's got 29 rooms, 12 bedrooms. It was built in 1927. Hefner bought it in 1971 for $1.1 million. At any given time, there are between 3 and 18 young women that live on the premises, and they're sort of the ambassadors for the brand, and they don't have to pay for anything, and they just are sort of eye candy there. So they're not to be confused with the women that are in the magazines. They're the ones, they just live there and add to the charm. And so the first day of work, I took a tour of the place, and the grounds are really beautiful. They have peacocks and flamingos running freely, and they have a mini zoo with monkeys and exotic pets, and they have a swimming pool, and they have the famous grotto, which is a concrete cave, very popular among people that read Playboy. It's where there's three hot tubs in there, and there's shelves of the biggest bottles of baby oil I've ever seen in my life, because baby oil was Hugh Hefner's favorite aphrodisiac, and it was definitely not the girl's favorite aphrodisiac. I had one time beg me to find a shampoo or a conditioner that would take baby oil out of hair. And so then there was also a kitchen that was open 24 hours a day, and my friend Bob was the chef there, and people could stumble in at all hours and order steak and lobster or bowls of Fruit Loops or whatever they wanted they would have. And Jack Nicholson used to call up and order a hamburger, and he would drive up to the mansion, and he would drive up to the front, and I would hand him his hamburger. He wouldn't say a word, wouldn't get out of the car, and just drive off. Didn't he? A lot of people took advantage of Mr. Hefner that way. So the parties at the mansion, this is what you wanted to hear about, were just like in the movies. They were just exactly what you'd think they were. There were beautiful women all over the place, but it was interesting because the guest list was personally handled by Mr. Hefner, and he was very particular about the men that could come to the Playboy Mansion. They had to fit the Playboy profile. They had to be successful, well-dressed and sophisticated, and there was always a lot of celebrities and sports stars there, and the regulars were Warren Beatty, Jack Nicholson, Kirk Douglas. Younger people don't know who these are, right? James Caan. Bill Cosby actually lived in the mansion for a year before he had to start giving. I know there's a lot of creepiness to this thing too, but anyway, it was kind of beneficial to everybody. The girls were very starstruck. The men enjoyed everything, and you could actually cut the sexual tension with a knife. And this was at a time in 1977. This is when Playboy was at its absolute peak of its empire. The magazine was selling millions. He had casinos all over the world. The sexual revolution was in high gear. This was this window between the invention of the birth control pill and the AIDS epidemic. And anyway, hedonism was on the surface. And Mr. Hefner did not drink or take drugs, but he was addicted to Pepsi Cola, and he had these vending machines all over the grounds, and they had to be well stocked, and the Pepsi had to be really cold, or else I would hear about it. But there was obviously a lot of drugs then, and at one time, Jerry Brown was the governor of California, and he was dating Linda Ronstadt, and they had a benefit at the Playboy Mansion, and so Linda Ronstadt brought all her rock and roll friends with her. She knew the Eagles and all the LA bands, and so the party was just getting into high gear when Governor Brown pulled up with his security detail of California State Troopers, and somebody actually had to go outside and stall them while everyone frantically ran around the mansion trying to clear the surfaces of white powder and dollar bills before they could come in. And then, of course, they were paranoid for the rest of the evening. But so now you want to know about sex. Oh my God, I'm out of time. I am so sorry. But no, there was sex at the Playboy Mansion, and it was just like you would imagine it. And the butlers didn't get to, you know, I wasn't stepping over bodies, and I wasn't, you know, asked to join in. And but there were certain areas like the grotto. The grotto used to be like, for people who read Playboy, I'm sure they thought it was heaven on earth. And now looking back on it, I just see it as the world's largest petri dish. So that was one of the places, the game room, Hugh Hefner's bedroom, all the bedrooms, and they all had bottles of baby oil and jars of Vaseline and towels on the table. So I thought I had a great job, but I thought the housekeepers had the worst job in the world. So every night sort of they had something scheduled, and Sundays were fun in the Sunday, where everyone, all the activities centered around the pool, and so they would have a barbecue brunch right after church, and then they would come in and yeah, I'm kidding about that. And Sunday night was movie night. He had a big movie room, and one night, we were getting ready to watch a movie, and sometimes Hugh didn't even show up for his own parties. He was a very reclusive, he was like a Howard Hughes guy. And he didn't show up, which wasn't unusual, but an ambulance pulled up, and there was a medical emergency. And I almost can't believe I'm telling the story, but anyway, Hugh Hefner almost choked to death on a Benoit ball. And you can look it up if you know, people are grabbing their phones now. And anyway, it was a very serious, he almost died. And it wasn't bad enough, but his valet came in and announced to this room full of people like this exactly what happened. And I was like, he didn't have to do that. But my friend Robert and I kind of agreed that this would have been the perfect Hollywood ending for Hugh Hefner. This would have been great. I mean, he went on to live for another 40 years, but it would have been a great story. But I worked there for a little bit over a year, and I kind of had seen everything I wanted to see, and so I moved on. But I realized that now this sort of hedonism, looking back, seems really unenlightened, and it is. And this was 42 years ago, and I'm glad that it's over. I'm glad that things have changed, and I want to say that I'm glad for the feminist movement. There's still a long way to go. I'm right there marching with you, but I would be lying if I told you that I didn't have fun while I was working there. So, thank you for listening.